Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 18th day of December, 2018. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And lawlessness still abounds. Not only does it abound, folks, it's growing, it seems, by leaps and bounds. And since we can't even summarize the lawlessness in just the D.C. area of the swamp in a mere half hour, we'll just start things off with a headline or two to make the point. First, a couple of items from the Witch Hunt smokescreen. Developing, says a piece by Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit, Mueller has released, the 302 report from the Flynn interrogation in January 2017, but the raw notes are still missing, this following an order from Judge Emmett Sullivan on Monday night that the special counsel release the original 302 report from the Michael Flynn interrogation in January of 2017. The only known 302 report, says this story, provided by Mueller to the judge this week was a report created 6 months after the setup of Flynn by FBI agents. We've talked about that of late, on July 19th, 2017. And after attorney Sidney Powell argued on Sunday that new facts recently revealed show that Mueller has destroyed evidence that obstructed justice in the Michael Flynn case, Mueller did finally release the original interrogation report, but the raw notes are still missing, and of course there's a whole lot of redactions. On to who and what he's covering up. New legal filings, says a related piece, reveal that the Hitlery camp was actually funneling cash, who could have thought it, to Christopher Steele to help her challenge the 2016 election. In this case, it's newly released British legal findings revealing that Hitlery paid the former British spy and author of the Russia, Russia, Russia dossier, Christopher Steele, to help her, quote, challenge the outcome of the 2016 election if the rigging turned out to be insufficient. In this case, Steele was dragged into a court in a defamation suit filed by three Russian bankers in London who claimed they were smeared in a discredited Slate article about a computer server, Trump Tower, and Moscow's Alpha Bank, following which the three Russian bankers, Mikhail Fridman, Peter Avin, and German Kahn, filed suit against the gutter research firm Fusion GPS. After the Steele organization evidently fabricated a huge lie about the Russian Alpha Bank, which was tweeted out by Hillary Clinton just 1 week before the election. What's new in the unearthed declaration is that Steele admitted that Hillary and the DNC not only paid him to help her challenge the outcome of the failed election, and this is in addition to the millions of dollars for the fake Russia dossier, she wanted his help to carry out their planned coup against the duly elected president. Here's how the Washington Times reported it. In an answer to interrogatories, Mr. Steele wrote that, quote, Fusion's immediate client was law firm Perkins Coie. It engaged Fusion to obtain information necessary for Perkins Coie LLP to provide legal advice on the potential impact of Russian involvement on the legal validity of the outcome of the 2016 U.S. presidential election. And it says, based on that advice, parties such as the Democratic National Committee and HFACC, also known as Hitlery for America, could consider steps they would be legally entitled to take to challenge the validity of the outcome of that election, unquote. So basically what we have is a failed presidential campaign paying to organize a coup through a foreign disinformation operation, aided and abetted, of course, by the DOJ, FBI, and Deep State Ministry of Truth. Speaking of which, the out but not quite suitably disgraced whoremeister himself, James Comey, according to Fox News' Greg Wilson, he's been dubbed the amnesiac with incredible hubris, is back on Capitol Hill for a new round of testifying. After what they call that controversial appearance more than a week ago, in which he told lawmakers seeking answers and not getting any over the FBI's handling of the Trump-Russia collusion probe, some version of I don't know, at least 254 times, Comey is back on the Hill for an encore. He testified behind closed doors again on Monday before members of the House Oversight and Judiciary Committees. No word so far this time on how many lies he's continuing to get away with or how many times he said, I don't know, and you don't have a right to know, but he did dive into House Republicans after the hearing on Monday for daring to focus their closed-door questioning on him and the federal bungling of the investigation into Hitlery's private email server and the bogus Steele dossier, saying that the GOP lawmakers should be more concerned about President Donald Trump's attacks on the Department of Just Us. AP says Comey claims House Republicans are shameful. NBC says the former FBI director lashed out at congressional Republicans saying, stand up and speak the truth. Good grief. Here's my favorite line from yesterday's example of the man who gives hypocrisy a bad name. Those Republicans, he said, joining the president in an effort to undermine the FBI will, quote, have to explain to their grandchildren what they did, unquote. How dare the president attack the FBI and what he laughably called the rule of law in this country? Well, they're law, folks, and it doesn't apply to anybody else. And unlike Comey, let's be honest here. If these lawmakers don't stand up, do the right thing, and put all of these treasonous you-know-whats behind bars, or yes, in some cases execute them for treason, their grandchildren won't have a country to worry about. His latest prevarications are supposedly going to be released within 24 hours. In the meanwhile, we do have this from Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, who tweeted that Republicans should stand up to Comey, gee, do you think, and his tremendous corruption from the fake Hillary Clinton investigation to lying and leaking to FISA abuse and a list too long to name. The president, she said, did the country a service by firing him and exposing him for the shameless fraud he is. I do like this summary that I saw, at least in part, from the Daily Caller. Paraphrasing, it said, the former FBI director, a.k.a. the Whoremeister, refused to answer many questions regarding the Trump campaign investigation, saying he did not want to compromise an ongoing cover-up. I guess, folks, we need to follow that up with one more massive set of whoppers revealed. As most of you know, your host has been talking about ionospheric heating, HARP, chemtrails, a.k.a. geoengineering, a.k.a. the politically correct terminology, sounds more scientific, SAI, or stratospheric aerosol injection, for a very long time now. And while your SUV isn't causing global warming, no doubt about it, Big Brother certainly is trying to manipulate the climate and the weather. Some of you know that I'm an amateur radio operator. As it turns out, I've had a ham license since before I could drive a car. So I've known quite a bit about sunspot cycles and how different wavelengths are refracted by the ionosphere since I was a teenager. I was also familiar with something that hams worldwide call the Russian woodpecker, since long before any details of HARP or the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project were ever first lied about and then finally revealed to the public, I can remember being told these things were over-the-horizon radars and similar, long before it was finally revealed that there was a whole lot more than that going on, including ionospheric heating and anything that might be related to weather modification. Well, it seems that now the UN has decided we need to dim the sun, evidently so they can take credit for the coming mini ice age and exacerbate the effects. Other admissions about just how badly they've been lying on this subject are coming out of the woodwork. And hey, it looks like they're going to be able to blame the Russians again. Here's a story from Sputnik News. The South China Morning Post has been talking about it, as has most of the alternative side of the web. Russia and China, says their headline, have teamed up to modify the atmosphere. And you were told that was a conspiracy theory, possibly for military use. According to that new report from the SCMP, the joint effort involves a Russian atmospheric heating facility, think HARP, pumping microwaves into the upper atmosphere, while a Chinese surveillance satellite handled the data gathering in orbit, allowing researchers to gauge the result and provide real-time feedback, I put that in there, they don't, of their high-altitude experiments. Here comes the line that's been conspiracy fodder for decades. According to the newspaper, the study was performed in order to test a new technology, well, not that new, although parts of it certainly are, for possible military application, as the facilities like the one used during the experiment could allegedly be used to, quote, modify weather and even create natural disasters like storms and hurricanes, well, or at least direct their paths, or even to, quote, affect the operation of human brains, unquote. And if you think about 5G, you have a pretty good understanding of where that's headed. But no, says one of the researchers who took part in the study, we're just doing pure scientific research. If there's anything else going on here, I am not informed about this, said Dr. Wang Yalu. And neither, of course, are the rest of the peons, at least until it's too late. So what else is new? All right, here's a story that my wife sent me. It comes from Fox News Channel 5 in New York. And yeah, it's downright hilarious. But having an African gray parrot ourselves, we both know that it's extremely believable. What we don't have, though, for reasons that are increasingly obvious, but this is yet another one, is an Amazon Alexa. Dateline, Didcot, Oxfordshire, UK, where Rocco, the African grey parrot, has fallen in love with his owner's Amazon Alexa. Trouble is, he keeps using it to go shopping, especially when his owner's away. So far, the precocious parrot has demanded treats including strawberries, watermelons, raisins, broccoli, and ice cream. But he's also ordered a kite, light bulbs, and even a kettle. Rocco likes to dance, too, and he uses the voice-activated device to play his favorite tunes. Sometimes they're slow numbers, but generally it says he prefers rock and roll. That is, when he's not shopping. There was more carnage on Wall Street yesterday, as I already indicated during yesterday's recording, but it ended up even worse. Another 500-point-plus down day in the Dow. And as Jim Hoff points out, the Dow Jones has now shrank by 2,700 points since the Fedmeister's insidious comments, as he puts it, in early October, to say they're going to continue to raise interest rates until something or maybe everything breaks. The Dow's now down after yesterday 3,200 points since its high on October 3rd. There is at least a bit of a dead cat bounce going on this morning. And as a result, he notes, that's $4 trillion in notional stock market value gone, or about one-eighth of the value of the entire U.S. economy has been lost in the stock market since the Federal Reserve decided it was time and safe now to blame Donald Trump for what's coming. Zero Hedge puts it this way in just one of their headlines. Here comes the rush to the exits. While last week's volatile seesaw action saw blurred market support levels, after Monday's furious dump, which saw an unexpectedly high number of heavy sell programs, which then pushed the NYSE tick indicator below 1,250 on an unprecedented 18 occasions, the S&P 500 definitively broke down on Friday below all kinds of support levels, and other key barometers of stock market health, like the various advanced decline lines and so forth, have at least one strategist writing, this sell-off is beginning to fire on all cylinders now. Here's a follow-up on the story I did the other day about U.S. bonds and debt. A lot of charts and graphs in this one, but the headline pretty well nails it. Foreigners dump U.S. treasuries, says the related piece, as they liquidate a record amount of U.S. stocks. China, too, may be dumping their U.S. holdings, although they're keeping their cards pretty close to the vest. What we do know is that in October, foreigners sold over $22 billion worth of U.S. stocks, the sixth consecutive month of selling, and that's a new record-long stretch of foreign sales for U.S. equities. Dr. Ron Paul, former congressman, presidential candidate, and longtime Austrian economist, has been warning about a major debt-induced meltdown in the markets and the U.S. economy, and the world economy for that matter, for a number of years now. He most recently told CNBC that a 50% correction will be depression-like and spark conditions that may be, quote, worse than 1929. He told CNBC's Futures Now program that, quote, once this volatility shows that we're not going to resume the bull market, then people are going to rush for the exits. And he went on to say something he's said for quite a while, which is undeniably true, and that is that the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing has caused the, quote, biggest bubble in the history of mankind. And as those who don't drink the Waystream Kool-Aid know, bubbles inevitably pop. He did, of course, suggest that there's a silver lining. While it's too late to prevent the coming collapse, unlike the Great Depression, Dr. Paul said the next historic downturn doesn't have to last a decade, as long as policymakers, and unless they get rid of the Fed, that means them, and lawmakers, don't continue to make the same financial mistakes. Quote, if you actually allow the liquidation, he said, it doesn't last long. Meanwhile, the Fed's Open Market Committee, of course, those who think of themselves as gods and above the law and able to decide something that once upon a time free markets alone could do, in other words, the cost of money or what now passes for it, interest rates, are meeting on Mount Olympus, a.k.a. the Eccles Building, Tuesday and Wednesday, and they're widely expected to vote to raise the Fed funds rate for the fourth time this year. But the president, at least, has weighed in again, urging the central bank to reconsider, not stick a pin in the bubble yet. He even asked them to, quote, feel the market in a tweet. Don't just go by meaningless numbers. Good luck, unquote. And even though analysts are writing things like, quote, no one seriously expects the Fed to leave rates unchanged on Wednesday, less than 24 hours after that sentiment was really common, and another 500 points in the Dow Jones Industrial Average lower, says Zero Hedge, it's looking a bit less precariously iffy for two main reasons. The first one, as they've been noting since September of 2015, before the expected rate hike way back then, is that the Fed really hates surprising the market, especially just ahead of the FOMC day. And as Morgan Stanley explained way back then, surprises do matter to the Fed because they can lead to a bigger tightening in financial conditions than is warranted. In other words, markets might panic. And here's the punchline. During prior rate tightening cycles, like 1999 and in 2004, the Fed would only raise rates if the market implied odds for a hike one day prior to their announcement decision were 70% or higher. In other words, if the markets already knew almost for certain what they were going to do. And this, says Tyler Durden, is really important because whereas rate hike odds heading into this week's decision were solidly above 70% for most of the past 3 months, they dipped just below that today, sliding to 68% and lower following the most recent market rout. And there's this, call it reason number two, very much related. As Bloomberg points out, a rate hike now would be only the first time in 24 years, or since 1994, that the Fed tightened in a market that was, quote, this brutal. To wit, the S&P 500 is down over the last 3, 6, and 12 months, a backdrop that has accompanied just 2 of the 76 rate increases since 1980. And fully half of the S&P 500 sits in a bear market, with groups like banks and transports tumbling day after day. So all of this, says David Rosenberg, presents an interesting dilemma for the Fed. Financial markets are telling them no mas, but the economic data suggests that further tightening remains appropriate, unquote. And of course, they do want to stick to Donald Trump. So if I had to bet, folks, you can guess. They'll go ahead and pull the trigger. But we'll see. I mean, really, it's not like the meltdown and hyperinflation isn't ultimately coming anyway. Here next is a story and a commentary on a story that normally I would give a pass to, but somehow in the current environment this seems particularly apropos today. The original story comes from the birdcage liner of record, the New York Times, and it suggests, according to the follow-up by Michael Snyder at the end of The American Dream, that human extinction wouldn't be that bad of a thing because, you know, climate change is destroying the planet anyway. Would our planet be better off, they and he ask, if humanity ceased to exist? Now here, folks, I have to add in my own upfront observation. I've talked about this for quite a while, especially when it comes to Scripture, that if you step back and look at what's been going on in America, and indeed the Western world, for quite a while, it is no longer a culture that worships God and upholds life. It's a culture of death. People tattoo their bodies with things. People sing about things. People dream about things that seem to have a whole lot more to do with imagery of the dark, the macabre, and the downright evil than anything that's life-affirming or positive. Yeah, look at Hollywood. America with a K has become a culture that worships death. So maybe hideous stuff like this in the New York Times is just more of the same. Says Snyder, all of this is a pretty morbid question, but today an increasing number of so-called intellectuals are bringing it up because they're convinced that humanity is the source of everything that is wrong with our planet, you know, Mother Gaia. So according to these religious zealots of a different stripe, humans are the primary source of climate change, in whichever direction it might end up going, and if we don't alter our course, the planet will be destroyed. Never mind, of course, that the sun is fully capable of causing some climate change on its own. But he notes, since humanity apparently lacks the will to end the behaviors which are destroying our planet, or if you look at the Comeys and Mullers of the world, not to mention the Monsatans, Apples, and Gulags, don't have the legal oomph to be able to get away with it. Many of them also believe it'd be a good thing if we were all completely just somehow wiped out anyway. Most normal people don't think that way, but these are the sorts of discussions, he says, that so-called intellectuals and elitists are now having all the time, and it sometimes, all too often, I note, bleeds over into the waste stream media. Here's the story from the New York Times, just published by Clemson University professor of philosophy, Todd May. It's really long, and it's entitled, Would Human Extinction Be a Tragedy? And he excerpts as much of it as we can stomach. Michael Snyder also begins with a claim that he says might be at the same time depressing, but at least upon reflection, not all that controversial. Well, as I go through it, I may have a comment or two. Human beings, he writes, are destroying large parts of the inhabitable earth and causing unimaginable suffering to many of the animals that inhabit it. This is happening through at least three means. First, human contribution to climate change is devastating ecosystems. Now, here, folks, I would probably agree in part, as you've heard me note before, as long as we understand that, no, it's got nothing to do with man-made global warming caused by your SUV, but it might have a whole lot more to do with weather warfare, major climate modification efforts, and the massive attempt to geoengineer the planet with SAI. And I guess you could argue it's not humanity doing that. It's a bunch of inhuman servants of the prince of this world. Back to Michael Snyder's number two, increasing human population encroaching on ecosystems that would otherwise be intact. And third, factory farming, including things like GMOs, I note, and other poisons, that fosters the creation of millions upon millions of animals for whom it offers nothing but suffering and then misery before slaughtering them, often barbarically. And there's no reason, he notes, to think that those practices are going to diminish anytime soon. Quite the opposite. And some of it suggests they intend to do it to other creatures they refer to as animals as well, on an even more massive scale than they already are. Remember, he says, the New York Times didn't have to publish that article by Professor May, but they chose to, so they must believe it's a reasonable opinion. And in that article, Professor May suggests that, quote, the elimination of the human species would be a good thing. Well, that is, if it wasn't for humanity's wonderful creative endeavors. He could have just said the elimination of the human species would be a good thing, full stop, but there's more to the story, according to this twisted logic, because human beings bring things to the planet that other animals can't, and some humans don't, he notes. For example, we have an advanced level of reason that can experience wonder at the world in a way that's foreign to most, if not all, other animals. We can create art, too, of various kinds, literature, music, painting among them. We engage in sciences that, at least sometimes, seek to understand the universe and our place in it. Were all our species to go extinct, all of that would be lost. But wait, Michael Snyder suggests, aren't there cultures that aren't engaged in such pursuits? Isn't it non-liberal to suggest that if they don't add that kind of value, they ought to be eliminated? I mean, isn't suggesting cultural superiority a sign of some kind of bigotry that's verboten? That would seem to be the logical conclusion of such thinking, and all you can do there is say, oops. Yeah, Michael, you're having an attack of logic. These people don't work that way. May doesn't even think that we need to promote, as many liberals do, population control, because at the end of the article, he suggests there's a very strong possibility, perhaps to be desired, that humans are going to be the ultimate cause of, quote, our own tragic end. And here Snyder notes that other elitist globalists like Bill Gates are also obsessed with climate change and population issues. Even your host notes that they often try to lie about what they really are looking to accomplish. Gates tries to get the gullible to believe that millions will perish as a result of climate change. He doesn't tend to point out that it's his ilk that are trying to bring about the worst sort of that. What they do try to push, says Snyder, is that because humans are the primary cause of climate change, reducing their population is essentially equivalent to saving the planet, if you have that particularly twisted way of thinking. All of which, folks, brings your host to the real irony of stories like this and the reason that I decided to do it. You have a bunch of leftists who say, on the one hand, human beings are a plague and need to be wiped off the planet because they're doing so many bad things that cause climate change, or that kill fuzzy little animals or poison the world. They just don't tell you that their plans to stop it are exactly what's causing the worst problems to begin with. Whether we're talking geoengineering or genetically modified Franken-engineering of you name it, or any number of other really nasty, evil things that just happen to line their pockets and need to be covered up while they tell you how it is that they are your only true savior. Snyder suggests that instead of simply giving up on life, people need to rediscover what makes life worth living in the first place. Your host suggests that if people quit playing God, a lot of that would immediately begin to follow, especially if they'd let the rest of us simply live our lives and honor our God instead of theirs the way we're supposed to. All of that should be food for thought. Thanks for being with us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.